Kimmel. One general comment, really not so much on the first Mishnah, on the second Mishnah. There are a lot, this is a composite sugya. There are a lot of different pieces in the sugya, and you sort of have to try to deal with each one on its own, and later when we get the whole structure, to try to put the pieces together. Part of the problem is, and you'll see Rashi grappling with this in a couple of places, is that the question of how you darshan, just to take one example, I may not be the only one, how do you darshan gedi, as a riboy or a miut? One of you pointed out well to me, I think it was Stern, pointed out in Seder, that if you think about Rabbi Yosei HaGalili and Rabbi Akiva, they are really starting with diametrically opposed assumptions on what the word gedi means. Rabbi Akiva starts out with an assumption that gedi means virtually everything, every little animal, not just shor chesev eis, which is what the Gemara says initially, but everything. And that's why you need miyutim. You need to be mimayit beimetzmeh. You need to be mimayit chai. You need to be mimayit oaf. Rabbi Yosei HaGalili, when he says that there's a hekesh between nevela and gedi, and los vashel gedi b'chalei v'imo, starts out with the assumption that a gedi would be fairly minimal. A gedi would either be just a goat, or maybe a goat, sheep, and cow, but certainly not any other animals, not a chaya, not an oaf. And therefore, you need a hekesh to nevela to teach you that anything that's bichlal nevela is potentially bichlal gedi. And then the Torah nonetheless says, bachalev imo lahotzi es ha'of.
So Rabbi Yosei HaGalili was, his limud was a riboy, not a
miut. It certainly sounds, the way he's coming from, the tension between his first statement and his second statement sounds like he was coming to be marbe initially with the hekesh of nevela to los vashel gedi, and then he's coming to constrain it slightly with chalev imo, Ezra and the Jason.
Whose assumption is more closely reflecting what halacha would normally take a pasuk like this?
Well, I don't know. It's very hard to judge. One of the things that we're not going to attempt to get to the bottom of is, you know, Chazal's system of halachic midrash. In other words, how do they darshan? Part of the problem, and this is a chicken egg question, that's where my discussion came up in Seder, is, you know, which came first, the halacha or the drush? And the answer is yes. Meaning, sometimes the halacha is a known halacha and the drush is a peg. And there are no doubt that there are times that the drusha is really the source for something. In other words, clearly there are certain types of midrash halacha, like klal uprado klal, that on some level demand exegesis. In other words, you see, v'nasata hakesef b'chol asher taveh nashecha, b'bakor v'atzon v'yan shechar v'chol asher teshechon nashecha. Akasev omer darsheni. In other words, what is bakar? In other words, it says b'chol asher teshechon nashecha, but it says b'bakor v'atzon v'yan v'ashechar. How do you define that, right? So clearly, I don't assume that there's a halacha mekubelis there. I assume that the Tanoim I assume there was a practice that on some level was mekubel. People didn't buy automobiles with kesem asur sheni. But there was a question of exactly what you could and couldn't buy, and the klal prad klal, the riboy mit riboy, is really creative fundamentally. In other words, it really is attempting to interpret it. There are some cases where you look at it and say, even though the din is deraisa, there's no way that this is really the source, and really the halacha should do one, this is sort of a peg to hang it on. Michael?
I know.
Are you continuing on that thought?
No, mine is really quick.
Go ahead.
Birds are the only thing that don't give off milk.
A chalevi mo of the things under discussion. I mean, chaya does. Chaya does. A wild, you know, wild mammal does.
Okay. That's
Michael?
If the halach is around birds, isn't that an asmachta?
No. An asmachta means where the din is only the rabbanon. And this is the pasuk to hang it on. Right, which is obviously why there are any number of dinim that the Rishonim argue about whether it's an asmachta, whether it's a din daraisa, because sometimes it's hard to tell. Right, in other words, there's a natural opportunity to confuse it. Ezra,
just as a cultural question, what chayot were common in the times of the Tanaim and Amoraim to be eaten? Like, and nobody eats like giraffe.
The only chaya that I can think of offhand mentioned in the Mishnah is a gazelle, right?
Tzvi. They may have eaten
ibex also. I'm just saying, in terms of what chayas are mentioned in the Mishnah outside the context of discussing a chaya, the only one that strikes me in the offhand is a tzvi, which is a gazelle, which is probably a fairly broad, you know, category of antelope. I don't know which are included and which are not.
I mean, in general, probably would have been very rare, just because, by definition, you weren't raising them.
Well, that's
so,
correct,
you know,
and they're not.
Them, you know,
they're certainly to the. I don't know for sure. I don't get the sense, for the most part, that too many. You know, let's say antelope. I don't think that they're domesticable, as far as I know. They can be tamed. I don't know if they're domesticated. There's a difference between taming and domesticating. Yeah, he's smiling. He knows where I learned these ideas from. Okay. Taming means you can take an animal, you can train a specific animal to be not to be dangerous, not to run away from you, and so on. To domesticate something is where you can really, where it will produce offspring that don't have the instincts to run away from you, and so on. Anyway, so I don't know if there are any chayos that can be domesticated. Yeah, you're right. You're correct. Reindeer can be. So there are some.
That
what?
Wasn't an issue for them.
Dolphins? I don't think dolphins are domesticable. They're tameable. Tameable and trainable. Okay. Anyway. All right. So I don't think. So the reindeer were not in that region. That was not part of their habitation zone. And so you can assume that. I don't know of any of the current animals. Okay. Fine. So now. So you're going to have to sometimes see whether or not one piece of the sugya is working with the assumption that Gedi is darshan one way, and another part of the sugya is working with a different, completely different set of drashas. When you get to Kuf Yudal and Aleph, that's the first place it's really going to hit you, where Rashi is grappling with this issue of trying to put all the pieces together. One other note, which you've heard before if you've been here long enough, methodologically speaking within Rashi, and this is going to come up on the first piece of the sugya, Rashi is a sugya rishon. Rashi is not concerned about what another, generally, most of the time, is not concerned about what another Gemara has to say. And the fact that he may explain one Gemara one way and another Gemara another way is not a steer within Rashi's, it's a steer within Gemaras. Now, the only thing you have to... So when Rashi does put two Gemaras together, as he's going to on Kufi Gemara Beis, you must ask yourself the question, why? Why does Rashi feel compelled here not simply to say this is a machlokas between two Gemaras? As a general rule, you know, Chachmei Ashkenaz, with the exception of Rashi, certainly starting to Balei Tosfos, try to level the playing field, make all of Shas one thing, and have as many sugyos as possible agree with as many sugyos as possible to have no conflicts. Early Chachmei Svaran, the Rambam and the Rif, are very happy to see, are very willing to see stira between two sugyos. It's not a big deal to them. It's one of the maddening things about trying to figure out why the Rambam paskin the way he did, because often one of the reasons he paskin the way he did is because he saw stira between two sugyos. He paskin like one and not like the other. And if we don't perceive the stira between two sugyos, we wonder why the Rambam didn't paskin a certain way. Anyway, with that said, let's start with the Mishnah. May I have a volunteer reader?
I was under the impression the reason why sometimes Rashi even maybe contradict himself between two sugyas. I heard there's a marsha. I never saw this inside. I heard there's a marsha which says that Rashi, you can't ask a steer from one Rashi and one masechta to another because they have different rebbeim for different masechtas, and so you know you don't know how to learn that masechta with that rebbe.
I thought you were going to say Rashi had two maduros, which we know from the Balei Tosfos he did one time through. I'd like to see evidence to that. Rashi quotes his rebbeim very, very rarely. The idea, and Rashi, by the way, had a very strong independent streak. And the notion that Rashi, you know, explained one way with the lack of awareness, you know, just because he learned one masechta with one rebbe and another masechta with another, I find that difficult. That Rashi would not have attempted somehow, let me take it a step further. I'd like to, if you can find that, Marsha, I'd like to see it. But all you've really done is you've taken. What you've said is that Rashi, instead of perceiving it as a machlokas between two Gemaras, he perceived it as a machlokas between two earlier Rishonim. But I find that, but I think that's more difficult than saying that he perceived it as a machlokas, right? No, that's what you're effectively saying. If he had Rebbe A, he learned Masechta, you know, Y with, and Rebbe B, he learned Masechta Z with, and he, you know, he follows one here and one there, Rashi presumably is aware there's a contradiction.
No, so the point was that under he was learning with that certain Rebbe for that Masechta, so he would have. If he had, maybe he had, maybe it has to do with the Maduros, but he would have interpreted the other Gemara to conform with this Gemara had he learned the...
But what did he do after the fact, right? He didn't write his commentary when he was a Talmud. He wrote his commentary presumably when he was older, right? So at that point, there should have been some type of resolution in his mind, right? He presumably was aware. I'm not uncomfortable saying Rashi forgot what he wrote in one Masechta. I don't find that theologically odious, but I think traditionally speaking, people don't like to say that. In other words, we don't want to say, how can you say? As I said last semester, the answer to some Rambams, and the Rambam in one place acknowledges this, I think, is that he forgot what he had written earlier, right? But people don't like to say that. So if you don't want to say it in Rashi, so presumably he knew when he wrote the commentary in one Masechta that he wrote something else on a different Masechta. And nonetheless, and he chose to keep it that way. So why? So what you're quoting from the Marsha says, well, he chose to preserve a machlokas and we've shown him how to read two Gemaras. I'm suggesting he chose to preserve a machlokas in the Gemara, to read two Gemaras. I think that my choice is a preferable choice because that Rashi's job is a perush on the Gemara. So if he sees a steer between two Gemaras, his job is not to resolve the two steers. His job is to explain each of the two Gemaras. Whereas if it's a steer on how to read the Gemara, which reading is correct, I presume Rashi would have been machria between the two. But okay.
So why then did Tosfos all of a sudden decide that it's necessary to resolve the steer? What changed in
I don't know. I don't know what was it that, you know, I don't think it's connected to. I know what some would say. Some would say that perhaps it's the influence of biblical scholarship, which was undergoing radical change then. And in biblical scholarship, obviously, you know, the Rambam opens the Mor Nevuchim by saying that there are eight explanations for why you can have a contradiction within a book. Yeah, but it's not really her specialty. So I could ask her, but I suspect she's going to tell me why are you asking me this question. Dr. Soloveitchik is the person to ask this question to. But the Rambam says there are, you know, eight different explanations to why you have a stira. One of them is that you have to figure out how to resolve the two. And the Rambam says that he gives a couple of things like that. He says that's how you have to resolve stiras in scripture, because the assumption is that numero echad. And then contradictions, and in some contradictions you say that there are multiple authors, like we do in Shas, right? We say that the Mishnah has two different opinions or something like that. So it could be it might be the influence of biblical scholarship and being engaged in Parshanut HaMikra, which would push some then to say, well, we're going to do the same thing to Shas as well. But I don't know.
But the Rambam was a star.
What's that?
The Rambam is working in different ways.
No, I'm just pointing out the Rambam. Okay. Anyway, so I don't know why, but that is... That is very pashut. That is a general rule. Certainly, the Balei Tosfos try to make everything olav kana echad. Rashi, my assumption is much less so, and early Chachmei Svarad very clearly much less so. Okay, later Chachmei Svarad, already Ramban and Rashba, and even a little earlier already starting, are influenced by the Balei Tosfos. Fine. So who's reading for me? Who would like to read? Sutton.
First Mishnah.
Okay, so if you put the oaf with the gvina ala shulchan, so you don't violate a lav. Okay, and your response to this is? Thank you. Why would I have thought otherwise? So the Gemara immediately jumps up and says, Rashi already points this out to you. That the Mishnah didn't need to tell you this, that it's obvious that halah is not d'oraisa. I don't think, but even if you can imagine that losav ashel should include achila, which is not crazy, to say that it includes putting the two near each other would be a little far-fetched. So now the Gemara says,
even if it was
in other words, if we say that if you're mala, if you're not over, it's mashma, if you're ochel, and obviously you have to take another step. If you eat milk and meat together, do you violate Nisa D'Oraisa or Nisa D'Rabbanan? You violate the Rabbanan. If you take your cup of milk and you have it along with your T-bone steak, so you violate Nisa D'Rabbanan. It's not Nisa D'Oraisa. Why? Because it's not Derech Bishul. So you have to say that Male is not Aser, but Ochlo Bikli Rishon. The Gemara is going to have on the opening sugya of the Perek, one of the early, it's at the end of the first sugya, is going to have such a discussion about the gzera of halah being shema yala be'ilfas, that you'll mix them together on the shulchan, but you still have the hot pots which the food was in, and that's how you have bishul be'kli bishul. Okay, for the moment, ochlo means ochlo ayde bishul. So the Gemara says, Ema. It means there's no possible way you could violate a lav. Why? Because besarof b'chalav is only the Rambana.
So but that's not what the Mishnah says. And the way the Mishnah says it, that what they did was legitimate implication. So what? Ema what? You can't say that.
So the...
So
you're correct. Shan and the Mishnah might very well be that besarof b'chalav is d'oraisa. And in fact, the interesting thing is that there's a discussion amongst the Rishonim as to what the Tanakam of Rabbi Akiva actually holds. So I would agree with you 100%. Pshat is that Besarov B'chalav is D'oraisa in this Mishnah. It's not the only Tana. But, so why then, what do you do with this Gemara then? What's the point of the Gemara? What would you use this Gemara to prove?
Asking,
You paskin, it's the Rabbanan, right? In the whole discussion of what the Mishnah really meant, what the Tanaim really meant, what the Amarim really meant, you know, I've said this many times, it really doesn't matter what the Tanaim said, it doesn't really matter what the Amarim said, we paskin like the Bavli. We paskin like the Shas, as the Rishonim might call it, and therefore, this is coming from the Stam of the Gemara, and the fact that the Stam of the Gemara interprets the Mishnah this way, even though it's a little bit tortured, indicate it does so because it holds that Psarach Pachalv is only the Rabbanan. So even if the simple reading of the Mishnah might be not so, nonetheless, the Gemara interprets it this way in order that it will be in consonance with the general halachically accepted opinion. Moshe?
And we had support for this from previously from the first version of the parrot, when we did the
we don't know whether it's the rice or not.
Right.
Correct.
We don't know.
Okay, but then we have the second mission in the parak, which says, by the way, now I'm going to tell you explicitly about poultry.
Yes, and the posture there is that it's us and lavasha, but you still know if it's the rice or not. Right now the discussion is not whether it's us or mutter to cook it. In fact, the posture of this could even be... once the Gemara is done with it, nothing. But the simple line, obviously, Bishul's Asar and Achila's Asar. Ellie?
You have to say that since the way the Gemara is phrasing it means that they were trying to bring in line with excessive tzak, maybe they're just trying to resolve this Stam Mishnah with all the opinions.
But it's clear, I don't think the Gemara, in other words, in light of everything that follows in the next Mishnah, the posture is that the Tanakama and the first Mishnah of the Parak assume that Pesarach Bechalav is Asur, and with the real possibility being Doraisa. The Gemara nowhere claims that nobody holds that Pesarach Bechalav is Doraisa. Right? There's no particular reason to deny such a Shita. It's easy to say you paskin like Rabbi Akiva. It wouldn't be such a big deal. And the simple reading of the Mishnah, in other words, the simple reading of the Mishnah is that it's Asur Midaraisa, is that you don't violate Allah for being Mala LaShocham. So the fact that the Gemara can reread the Mishnah, it's true you can. You can say the Mishnah was Lav Davka, but why? Why bother doing that? Why? What compels you? What compelled the Gemara to say that, no, there's no Lo Sase whatsoever, if the Mishnah formulated it the way it did? Right? When you read the next Mishnayos, both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yosef Galili, there seems to be a chiddush here, that oaf is not included. So, okay, you could argue not so, but I think the posture in the Mishnah is that it is Doraisa, and the posture in the Gemara is the Gemara doesn't want that to be because we don't accept that. We don't paskin like that, and therefore they want to try to interpret the Tana otherwise. Nadav?
I think the more natural implication from the Mishnah is that if you're Mila Basar onto the
So again, that simply adds fuel to my argument, okay. Right? That the agenda of the Gemara here is to establish that Pesarach Bechalav is only the Rabbanan.
Oh, you think the agenda of the Gemara, not just...
In other words, the purpose of the Gemara of interpreting the Mishnah, as you may be right, it could have gone down a different path. But by the way, you would have had a problem there because nobody's going to say Hamale es habasar ala shulchan, you know, Mala basar ben mal shulchan, ain over below tase. I'm sorry, over below tase. Nobody's going to say that.
Well, we had the first Mishnah.
What's that?
The first Mishnah essentially did that.
No.
But I'll tell you what. The Gemara is not going to go down that road because the Gemara knows that can't possibly be the deal. No one is going to say that. In the first Mishnah, it's a different story because it doesn't say over below Tasei. It just says Asim. No one's going to say that Hamala Basar ala Shulchan in Magvina Areze below Tasei. Nobody's going to say that. No, they're not going to be Medayik that way because that's impossible. Because Lo Sevashel Gedi Bachalevi Mo. Right, nobody could even, you couldn't have a momentary Havamina. The legitimate Havamina is that Bisar Of would have been Doraisa. Okay, Ben?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that it's essentially not found in the Mishnah to have a phrase say you're not over below tase, but there are 15 times that it says in the Mishnah over below tase.
Oh, Barry Lund's on there. Cool.
It's not on there, actually. I tried.
Oh, okay.
It says that it has a virtual copy, but it doesn't.
Oh, it's not there. Okay. So it says...
It says many times in the Mishnah, this case over below tase. But it maybe one time in the whole Mishnah says, Eino over below Tase. So it could be that part of the part of what's instigating this Gemara to make the emendation is that it's just very unlikely that the Mishnah would say Eino over below Taaseh.
Okay.
Maybe not be the language of the Mishnah.
No, he means the language of the Mishnah itself may cause the emendation, not just an external svara. Okay. No, he's saying the notion normally hareze below tase is the normal expression. To say einze, eino over below tase is highly unusual.
Right, the reinterpretation is more in line with usual
language. No, what he's saying is that it's the unusual language that caused the Gemara to understand not that you don't violate a law, but that you can't violate a law.
Okay.
Right? It's either way, it's abnormal usage, but the reason not to read it simply as the opposite, areze belav, is because it's so unusual to formulate it this way. Therefore, it's not just that you don't violate a law; it's that you can't violate a law. Okay. Next minute. Any further questions on that? Okay. This is a simple sugya. Now a little longer. Good. Besar behema. Continue.
I have a cold, so I'm just gonna back out here.
Okay. Nobody along here? Benjamin, go ahead.
Question.
I'm not discriminating your time. It's just that some of you read more excessively. Yes.
We talked before a little about this, but we resolved by saying a certain time period, but the difference between Hamala and Ola. So this you have two Mishnahs.
Right. Hamala. So this is the normal usage, and my guess is this is later. I know that Ola is early. Let me start by saying the following. I assume that Ola is early because it's in the words of Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. And this is a very important question. It's a major machlokas in modern scholarship, which actually was already a machlokas among the medievals, as to who was responsible for the formulation of the Mishnah. Now, the modern machlokas is between Professor Jacob Neusner and everybody else,
and
like Albeck, Hanoch Albeck, and Yaakov Nachum Epstein. And there, it's unfortunately laden with an agenda, which is the reliability of rabbinic attributions. And Albeck and Epstein, of course, assume by default, as the rest of us do, I think, that you generally assume that they are accurate unless you have evidence that there's a dispute or an issue with one of them. Neusner had his particular agenda. But even when you separate the agenda, there is a question, and this already seems to be debated between the Rambam at the end of his introduction to the Peirush HaMishnayos and Rav Shri Ragon as to how Rebbe compiled the Mishnah. Rav Shri Ragon, in his famous Igeres, the Igeres Rav Shri Ragon, sees the Mishnah as being really a compile from pieces and with some new material. And that's how Rebbe put it together. But Rebbe was not the original formulator of the Mishnayos with received opinions that he formulated in this language, but rather it wasn't only received opinions, conceptual opinions, ideas, but it was actually formulated opinions. Whereas Rambam sounds like at the end of the Hakdamah to the Peirush HaMishnayos that Rebbe was responsible for all the formulations, but obviously the Rambam assumes that he recorded accurately these dinim that were transmitted. The literary or linguistic evidence on some level, I think, points to Rav Shri Ragon's position. There are certain types of formulations that, unless you had a genius forger setting out to do it, seem to distribute most commonly within certain generations. In other words, there's terminology that's unique to Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in terms of their words, and even more so in terms of the presentation, which suggests that Rebbe was working already with earlier redacted materials. That's why I'm comfortable assuming that the difference between the two, Ola, and so I'm assuming Beis Shammai Beis Hillel is the earliest, there's sort of three tkufos. There's the Beis Shammai Beis Hillel tkufa, there's Yavne, and there's Usha, and therefore I'm comfortable assuming that Ola is the earlier terminology found in Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, and I'm willing to work with the assumption that Mala was the correction. In other words, Ola was awkward, but that seems to have been the earlier usage, and later the editors of the Mishnah corrected that to what they thought and what we would have expected to be the more normal usage. I will tell you that there are dialects of Aramaic in Eretz Yisrael, the Targum of Eretz Yisrael, Neofiti, that tends to show a lot of intransitive verbs where you would have expected transitive. Where you would expect ma'aleh, and instead you get a form like ola. I don't know enough. You have to ask someone like Dr. Steiner, who might be able to tell you more, who's probably knows the phenomenon better in terms of this the shift between the two. Okay. So anyway, now, Besar Behema. Go ahead. Who's Benjamin? You're up.
Serving Matorah, Bechali Behema Torah, Asr Levasho, the Asr Banah.
Okay, you don't have to read any further for now, because right now this is all the Gemara is working on. Okay, so now, and realize minohani mili, it's somewhat obvious, but Rashi already comments here. Minohani mili what? Okay, so who's the Gemara explaining, obviously? The Tanakama, who says, Bisar behema tahora, bachalei behema tahora, osir. How do you know that? The Torah says, Gidi, bachalei imo. So minohani mili. Okay, now this is a difficult diuk, as the Gemara is immediately going to jump on Rabbi Lazar, because we normally would say the following. We work with an assumption. I don't know if he originally coined the term, but he has used the term broadly. Dr. Elman's usage of the term omnisignificance. Is that his term, Ari? Do you know?
Oh, no, he didn't make that up.
Okay, fine. Omnisignificance means that every single word is significant and important, and therefore an extra word, a word that wasn't necessary, should be there to teach you something, or it shouldn't be there. So if the Torah says, Gedi Izim, I don't want to elaborate, but what you said is not correct. That's a different argument. That's an argument that two different words do not mean exactly the same thing. That's very, you don't have to, on a pshat level, you don't have to accept Omni significance, and you still, I'm not saying I agree with the Malbim, you still have to grapple with that. Enough, but you said it, and I just want to point out that's not so posh. So the Torah says, Gedi Izim. It says it once, and we'll know Gedi means Gedi Izim. Why do you have to constantly? We would have said it only tells you once to teach you that Gedi means Gedi Izim, and after that you would say that you don't have to tell us Izim. We know. You, like when you refer to an author in an article, right? The first time you refer to the author, you often put first and last name, and every subsequent time you just put the last name, because why do you need to keep repeating it? So Gedi is its first name, Izim is its second name, and use just one of the names repeatedly. So the Gemara, that's why the Gemara immediately, now the diuk seems to be Gedi Izim, this is Gedi Izim, but Gedi Stam is not Gedi Izim. But that's not normally the way we learn, and that's why the Gemara jumps up and down and says, Vileilef Minei. Why not learn from this Gedi Izim that every Gedi is Gedi Izim? Now, I had a curious question, and this was a real shocker to me. How many times is the word Gedi found in the Torah? Singular or plural?
Eight.
Did I say this yesterday? Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I can't remember what I said. See, it's a problem with having a Yoredeish here that I sometimes know I have to repeat myself. Okay, I was shocked. Eight times. So, it's not a common word. So why not learn that this is Gedi Izim and every other one is Gedi Stam. Now, where do you have Gedi Stam? Lo Savashel Gedi Bachalevim three times, and once in the Parsha, except there, it's Hinei Shalachti HaGedi Hazem. I might argue that HaGedi already making it definite that it's a reference back. So basically, the only time you have Gedi, not reference with Izim, is Lo Svashel Gedi Bachalevimo. Okay. So now the Gemara says, Vili Aleph Mina, that Gedi means Gedi Izim. Ksiv. Okay, so notice, by the way, which Gedi it quotes now, and some of you may have seen Tosus already. There are three Gedis in the Yehuda and Tamar story, and there are two Gedis, I think they're Gedi, I don't know if they're both Gedayei, in the Yaakov and the Brachos story. So the Gemara now jumps to the other story. It doesn't quote the second occurrence. It doesn't quote the second occurrence within the story of Yehuda and Tamar. And you know, Tosfos claims that the Gemara is treating all the occurrences in each parsha in one. Now, the truth is, what Tosfos says is mocharach based upon a different issue, which is what happens next in the Gemara. So the Gemara now said that you have two psukim that say gedoye izim, and if you have two psukim that say gedi or gedoye izim, obviously the Torah is telling you with these two and nothing else. In other words, The rule is you have what's called a binyanami kasav echad. What's a binyanami kasav echad? You have a particular din which applies to a particular circumstance, and by analogy, it's not really a kal v'chomer, it's more like what we call bamemotzinu. We say that if the din applies in this case here, it should apply in similar cases because it's logical as well. Now, what happens if the Torah, what happens if it's insufficient? What if there's some disqualifying aspect to that particular subject material that maybe the din might be unique there? So then, that's called a pircha. That's a pircha. We say mala x that has this unique din, and that's why it has y also, whereas the other din wouldn't necessarily have that. So what then do we look for? We look for a mikra sheni. We look for a second pasuk, and now we make a binyanav mishnei ksufim. We say, we make what's called a tzad hashaveh, that the common denominator is they are x, and they have the din y, so to anything that's like x has the din y as well. And if you can't sort of find, and this is going to come up later in the sugya, if you can't find a common pircha to both of them, now you have a binyanav mishnei ksufim that stands. But if you have one pasuk that can teach you the din, and there's no pircha on that din, on that pasuk, and then you have a second pasuk that teaches you the din. I think we spoke about this in Tam Ki Ikar, or in Zera B'Sheila. If you have a second pasuk that teaches you that din, so what is your response then? That the din only applies in those two cases. Why? Because if the Torah wanted the din to apply in every single case, it would have told you it once. By the fact that it tells you it twice and the second one is unnecessary, what the Torah is really telling you is that it applies in these two cases and nowhere else. So that's what the Gemara says, that you have Ksiv Kra Harina, another Gedaye Izin, and the fact that the Torah does this twice for you, once in the Parsha of Yehuda and Tamar, once in the Parsha of Yaakov and the Brachos, tells you that Gedistam, Komakum Shemer Gedistam, Afila Para, V'Rachel, V'Mashma. Okay, now the Gemara says, it's by the way a strange choice of language, Para V'Rachel, what would you have said? No, Se can be Kesev Arez. Tle or Egel. Right, that's what I would have expected. Why they use Parvaracha, which is the mother, is interesting. Yeah.
Can I suggest because Gedi is a juvenile, at least male in name, Gedi, so therefore it's giving the exact opposite, which would be an adult female? They're saying that it's covering everything.
No, see, I'd be more comfortable, but the problem with what you're saying, I think he's going down the right road. There's somehow an analogy in their mind that if it's Gedi, Bachalev Imo. And Imo, if it's a Gedi, is, Si'irah. And then Rachel and Parah are the analog. But why does it go that way? Why does it just not, we're darshaning from Gedi. We're saying that Gedi means any of the three species.
Anything that has this as its mother.
That's a strange way of doing things.
Rabbi Yosei Galili, though.
No, I agree. In Rabbi Yosei Galili's drasha, Bachalev Imo, in that context, you're right. If the diuk here were Bachalev Imo, Bachalev Imo, Bachalev Imo, I would have understood Parah V'Rachel. But I don't. Okay, it's not. The world doesn't end. I just don't know why. It's something to keep your eyes open for. What, by the way, methodologically, would you think the answer probably is? Not specifically, but generically. Is that the phraseology is being lifted from another context in which Parah V'Rachel make more sense. Right? When you find the formulation of a din to be somewhat awkward, often it has to do with the fact that it originates in another context and the language is being borrowed, but the form is being preserved, and therefore it's a little bit forced.
Is there a shas on this?
I don't know. I said I don't know any specifically what might be the impetus for this. But methodologically speaking, that's where you might look. Yeah. What's that? In what?
Well, it's just strange.
Really?
What?
Who told you this? I believe it. Okay.
Well, you knew the Rachel one.
Wow. Well, Rachel I understood. But wow.
What do you think he named his
That's really interesting.
For?
That
means the
Okay, I thought you were going to say the Rakos by Miketz. Yeah, okay, that's the cook. But okay.
Can we share this with the rest of the class?
He said that Leah, except for that's really interesting. But here's the catch: Chazal didn't know that. It's not likely that I mean I could be what?
They didn't know that. Maybe this.
Look, sometimes you have the only materials I know that are preserved in Chazal of the ancient Near East are some of the Canaanite myths that come down probably because you still have Phoenician culture alive, up north, and so that's how some of those Gemaras of Baba Basra, about Sarah Shoyam and all that stuff may come about. I don't know if Chazal know that.
Well,
I'm not talking, but they don't necessarily realize who that Daniel is. But I think, but in other words, there are Canaanite myths that Chazal seem to be aware of, or they have the echoes of them. But those really are Canaanite and Ugaritic. They're not. It's not Akkadian. I don't know. Interesting. I can't rule that out, but on a non-legal institution, it surprises me more. If we're a halachic institution where we have a much stronger Mesorah, there's a much weaker Mesorah interpretation of non-halachic passages in Tanakh and in Torah, I would be surprised if that one made it. But very interesting. Okay, so even if it doesn't answer my question, thank you. Fine. So now the Gemara says, so then why not learn from these two that Gedolei Izim? So here now the Gemara is prepared for the answer. Which then, of course, the Gemara always turns around. This is sort of like a stock sugya trade, right? The editors in Bavel knew they had to stamp it out. So as soon as you introduce Shtei Ksuvim Gam Ke'echad, so immediately they say, Hanicha. It's really a machlokas. Where is the machlokas? I think it's in Kiddushin. But I don't think it's in I'm not sure if that's where it might be. That's on Shein V'ayin, I think. I don't remember if that's. I know the Makor is in Kiddushin somewhere, but I don't remember if that's the specific case. That's just a Masur Shashas link for the expression. You know what? Sitra Shechter always did this. I'm going to do it also. Can you read that Masur Shashas for me?
Kiddushin Kav Dalet.
Finish it. What does that mean? Yes, and that means what? That he didn't want to repeat. This expression, Shtei Ksuvim Ke'echad, appears probably 20, 30 places in Shas. He didn't want to repeat it everywhere, so he tells you sometimes he'll give you the three or four places, like the next, two ones down. And sometimes he'll just say, look in Kiddushu Chaftal, B'shan Nesamein. There we will lay it out. We will give the probably literally the siman, like the simanim and mesorah, which is what he's borrowing from. Masoretic notes, they'll say, the Gemara will use it also. But wait a minute, use it v'simanech, and then it gives you a mnemonic to remember it, and that's how the Masoretic notes work as well. So there he's the mesorah sashas v'sham nisamein. So this way he doesn't have to repeat it. So if you want to find it, you'll have to go to Kiddushu Chaftal, and if it's not, I think that might be it, but if it's not, we have to look at all the Gemaras, and eventually you'll find the Machlokas. So what if you hold that shteiksu b'avon ke'echad are melamdin? Now, why would that be? So I really don't know, but al derech musar, I would say that it's teaching you the mitzvah of chazara. That's what the Torah is teaching you there. The chazara is a din daraisa. That's why the Torah is willing to repeat it once. Of course, that shouldn't be taken to mean that you're only supposed to chazar once, but fine. Okay, fine. We've settled that. Now, go ahead. So what does the Gemara say? So you have two miyutim here. Izim, ha-izim. And therefore, this is dafka, means these examples are dafka, the only cases that have izim. Everything else would be gedi, not specifically izim. Okay, fine. So basically, what we have, the starting point of the Gemara at this stage, Rabbi Elazar claims, who is Rabbi Elazar, by the way? No. Rabbi Elazar ben Shemo was a Tana. Rashi, in a few places in Shas, points out when you have a Rabbi Elazar quoting Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar, the Amora was. That's Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus, and he's one of the earlier Tana. No, when you have Rabbi Elazar quoting Rabbi Elazar, it's Rabbi Elazar ben Pidas, the Amora, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, quoting, and it's obviously not a direct quotation. And Rashi actually talks about not him, but the issue of direct quotation at the bottom of the page, quoting the Tana, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemoa. Obviously, a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan never saw with his own eyes Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. That would have been impossible since he was one of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's Rabbeim. And even Rabbi Yochanan probably never saw Rabbi. Okay, fine.
Yeah, Shmuel is first generation. Then he see, like, he would have learned from the last...
Only Rabbi. He would not have known Rabbi's Rabbeim. Uh-huh. He would not know Rabbi's Rabbeim. But it's not even... We're not dealing with Shmuel yet. Right now we have Rabbi Elazar. This is the Amor Rabbi Elazar. Fine. Now the Gemara starts... So what is the assumption of Rabbi Elazar? That gedi means any young animal. Patel?
How is this a miyut? This miyut is just the hay miyut. It's just because it's extra, it's a miyut?
It's a miyut, yeah. Often when we say Ha-kesef means the kesef, meaning not any kesef, but a specific one. It would exclude a different kind. So he generally is a miut.
I was looking at Gedi Ha'izim, it doesn't sound like you even, sometimes like you have a miut, which is like, it's extra, so it's a miut. Sometimes it just like, it almost implies that it's, like, you said the, like if it was an adjective, it'd be like the green one. Gedi Ha'izim, almost when you stick a hay in front, doesn't make it, it sounds like it's describing the Gedi, no?
No. In this case, it's not, because that's a feature of Biblical Hebrew. Meaning, I'm trying to remember, there are exceptions. There are exceptions. I don't want to go, other than to say, the way you, when you have a hayayidia, when a bound form, an ismach, right, you put the hayayidia on the second one. It's really, gedi ha'izim is really ha'gedi izim. But the way you do it in Biblical Hebrew as a general rule, you say the base ha'kneses. Right, you don't say habes kineses.
Well, you have hakeves echad.
Excuse me, that's an adjective, not a bound form.
You also have a hay.
So that's
hay
that's
to make a species.
What's that?
Name.
So I think that, in other words, I'm not gonna argue whether or not it really is pshat or not, but gedi ha'izim is the same thing as hagedizim.
If I had like a proper noun afterwards, like I want to say like, you know, Moshe HaChacham, right? So he's Moshe the smart one. I wouldn't say HaMoshe HaChacham.
No. But Gedi is a nismach. It's not, Gedi is not a standalone noun. It's the goat of, it is the kid of goats or something like that. Gidoye is not Gidoyim. Right? I don't know what the non-bound form of Gedi is.
Gedi?
It might be the same form. Because Engedi is probably, it's puzzle, but the point is it stands alone. But Gidoyei is Nismach. It's not Gidoyim Izim, it's Gidoyei Izim. Kids of goat is the way you would translate.
Has an Chacham in the phrase I use is not a Nismach?
No, Moshe is a noun. No, the first one is the Nismach, right? Moshe, the wise one, it's in a positive, right?
What's a positive?
Like,
Moshe, comma, the wise one, or unless you're saying Moshe, he's not saying it's a sentence. Moshe HaChacham, Moshe is the wise one.
It's embedded.
Yeah.
A positive meaning.
I don't know what you mean by it. No, we would say Moshe, comma, the wise one.
That's an unbound form.
That's not bound. That's not
right,
bound.
That's unbound.
Yes.
So what was the phrase again? A positive? No.
An appositive.
A positive.
Yes. I'm sorry. So have I
don't really understand the difference.
Between
the Gedi Ha'izim and Moshe HaChacham.
It's not Gedi. If you, the Gedi is whatever, I don't know what the unbound form of this Gedi. It's Gedi. Base HaKnesses is Bayis Shel Knesses, or HaBayis Shel Knesses, the house of gathering.
Okay.
Gedi Ha'izim is the kid of goats.
Okay. Instead of
Moshe HaChacham is not Moshe of the wise one. It's Moshe, comma, the wise one.
And why can't it be the goat kid?
So what the way we would translate in other words, Beis HaKnesses. That's good. So what proves that it's not that? All right, so you what to answer the question seriously? What proves that it's not that is Gedoye Izim. Gedi might be bound or might be unbound, but Gedoye is definitely bound. Gedoye is definitely Nismach. Nismach is the term you may be more familiar with. In other words, Gedi might be the equivalent of Bayis or the equivalent of Base, Bayis Shell. But Gedoye is clearly Gedoyim Shell. So therefore, if this plural is that way, Gedoye Izim, Gedi Izim is the same thing. Or others call the
construct.
Yes. Okay. So therefore, I'm not going to even claim that I can really get into Chazal's mind in terms of how they darshaned the Hebrew, but in the case of Gedi Ha'izim, is really Hagedi Izim. But the way it's done in Biblical Hebrew is standardly you put it on the, I don't know, what do you call the second form, the Somech?
The Nismach and the Somech.
Which is the first one? It's the Nismach. Right, you put it on the Somech. Okay, you should be aware, Mishnaic Hebrew, we sometimes depart from that. We will sometimes say, you will find even in good Mishnaic Hebrew manuscripts, something like, you know, Habes HaMedrash or something like that, where you'll get a doubling of the hay, or and you even have where you get it on both, but that's not typical. For example, by the way, Bayamim Ha.
No, those are all adjectival.
There's a complicated problem there. I just had this discussion. Dr. Bernstein pointed something out to me. Look in the Kisveyad there. You'll see it's going to be a little surprise. Anyway, so let's just leave it at that for now. So they darshan two miyutim. Ari?
I mentioned this earlier. I still don't understand. How could the Gemara have had a halavina that you would need a lima issue that kadim means exactly what it means?
No, the havamina of the Gemara.
No, but the leilach minay is saying learn that gedi whenever
always means izim.
But that's exactly what gedi means. Why would you? Mean
no, you're stuck in the tautological circle. You're assuming gedi means goat. I want to know on a pshat level before you turn to Aramaic, and I haven't checked the rest of Nach. I want you to know if the Torah only said three times lo sashal gedi b'chema. How do you know that gedi means only? A little. How do you know it's a goat?
As opposed to a baby animal.
Whatever, as opposed to baby what, animal.
Gedi.
Yeah.
Whatever it means.
You know.
Whatever it means, I know it doesn't mean para.
No, it could mean a baby animal.
But that wouldn't be a para.
Why not?
Because para's not a baby.
No. One second. Time out. Okay, no, this
what I'm saying, like,
para and Rachel doesn't mean only para and Rachel. It means tle and egel.
Fine, but the point is that you wouldn't meaning this limit is saying you should limit gedi whatever gedi means, you should limit gedi to that.
Correct. And the question is, what does gedi mean? So the Gemara doesn't even assume that there's a difference between old and young. The question is species.
This is not a question of defining what gedi means. This is in response to Menahani Mile. How do we know that it refers to
the, but the assumption of the assumption of the Mishnah is that gedi means any behemoth. Forget the age issue now, just in terms of species.
Right, but I'm saying the
just as the word seh can definitely be kesev or eis. So the assumption in the Mishnah apparently was that in bechalal gedi is any of the three behemoth species. So the Gemara wants to know, how do you know that? And the answer is, the initial answer is, because the Torah here says gedi izim, which is mashma, that this is gedi izim, you know, because gedi regular, you wouldn't know that it was limited to a goat species.
So part of the harmony would be that gedi is not a specific species.
Correct. It means a young animal. You know, perhaps aided by the fact that bachalei imo. I don't know.
We have examples.
So there, okay. So now, so the Gemara says that based upon the fact that it says gedi izim twice, either that or the fact that there's a miyud on it means that this is that everything gedi is gedi stam is chol behema b'mashma unless it says gedi ha'izim.
Like a cub.
Right. If you want to know the opposite example where the Torah only says it once and it becomes the paradigm, I believe, is lo yakum eid echad bi'ish. No, they're actually, they don't, I wonder if they do ask the question there. Why don't you, the Aleph Mina, you should check that one. We have two Eid Echads, which teaches you that Stam Eid is Shnei Eid. Okay, so put that aside. You should check what they do with that. Okay, so now the Gemara begins with, now the Gemara moves to Shmuel's statement. And the Gemara says, go ahead.
Amar Shmuel.
Okay, so what were the three? Obviously, Shmuel, at least the Gemara thinks, seems to have a counting problem initially. 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 is 3.
It's 3.
Okay. The answer is obviously it was a brisker, so the state Sveidinim, and therefore it's 6 divided by 2. That said, he says, Gedi l'rabo says hachelev means the forbidden fats. Gedi l'rabo says hamesa means. Means nevela, okay. Gedi l'rabos is a shlil, fetus. No. Be careful. A shilya is the placenta. The fetus is basar. The placenta is junk. Pirsha bialma. All right. So now gedi. Yeah.
The shlil, when they talk about the shlil in the Salgamar, is it referring to after they shech and they find it inside, or it's got aborted?
No. Let's assume for the moment it means that you had a vlad. And you have a shilya. You see, if you have, this is a hilchas nida issue. If you have a shilya and you haven't had a vlad, the assumption is ain't shilya below vlad, and therefore there's a vlad in there somewhere. So just to keep it simple.
This is something
no, he means is it inside the animal now, or it already came out of the animal?
Or it could come.
Or it's not aborted.
I don't think it doesn't matter. You don't have to abort it, just get born.
Well, then it's not a shilya. Yeah. Then it's not a shilyal anymore. Then it's a. Then it's a.
Oh, you're talking about, you, no, you're talking about the shlil, not the shilya.
Yeah, the shlil.
Oh, the shlil. Let me just think for a second on this. The shlil is going to be busser no matter what. The shlil is going to be busser no matter what. The interesting question for
what
those who.
Yeah,
the Ben Pekua issue. If you weren't late shiur, for those who weren't early shiur on Thursday, did we get there? Yeah, we got. I didn't mention shiur because nobody asked, but Jason asked the question very sharply. There's a whole discussion about the chalav of a Ben Pekua. Whether the chalav of Ben Pekua has a din of chalav. If it doesn't have the din of chalav, Rabbi Kiv Eger and somebody else thinks it does not have the din of chalav, at least midaraisa, so midaraisa, I think we found a new way of having real basa b'chalav. So now you can bring a raya. And now you can bring a raya from the fact that Nachman didn't say to Yalta, well, maybe because it was the Rabbanan. Okay, never mind. Fine. So anyway, either way, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it's aborted or not. It says the dinner busser.
Ami and I found on the reference to Kuftet Zion where it seemed to be that there it was an assumed thing that you could learn that logically just from that it's obviously going to be.
Hold
neat.
On. So
the here it has to darshan out.
So the
what's the Hava mean here?
So 1 second. So that seems to be sort of a stira between the two Gemaras as to how you relate to shlil. Minasvara, of course it should have been basar. It's just mini basar.
Right, no, I'm saying what would have been your halamina otherwise? That's
correct. That is difficult. Why? I don't know why you would have thought that a shlil is not. I mean, the only thing I can tell you is the following. What's the din of chaylev of a shlil? You have an animal that's, you know, 9 months or wherever long gestation is, just about. And you take it out. What's the din of chaylev? The chaylev?
I would assume the same as any other chaylev.
No, it's not. Really? It's not, because in order for chaylev to be chaylev, it has to be in a certain position on the animal. Mm-hmm. It has to be chaylev shalak salam, has to be chaylev shalak kerev. Mm-hmm. And since a shlil is not an independent animal yet, therefore the chaylev is in the wrong place. And therefore it's not chaylev,
so
it's just shuman.
Kosher?
It's just shuman. What?
So it's all kosher.
Correct.
So now I
figured out how to get my filet mignon. My filet mignon is you have to, you know, get the fetus right before it's born.
It's mini filet mignon.
Okay, mini filet mignon, right. Ari. What's that? Right now we don't have to answer that question because Shmuel, at least as presented by the Gemara, is speaking about the Tanakama. Now, the Gemara later on Kuf Tes Zayin is going to try to put the two together. And there appear to be some contradictions, and some not explicit. And that's one of the issues that Rashi picks up on here. That's going to be what animates Rashi, the big Rashi, about what the Gemara, when the Gemara starts pulling things away. The reason why Rashi, and this is the point I made earlier in Shir about Rashi's methodology, the reason why Rashi feels the need to resolve the two Gemaras is because that Gemara makes explicit reference to this. The stem of the Gemara there brings in Shmuel's din and tries to reconcile with Rabbi Akiva. But for the moment, there's no need to reconcile with Rabbi Akiva because he's speaking, at least as presented by the Gemara, if any of that, he's speaking within the Tanakama. Right?
Just a thought of mine. Could it be possible that the Hava Amino, at least in this Gemara, in regards to the Shilio, was that it might have been considered like a Sharet? In other words, something like an unborn chicken?
No, because the shlil, see, it would depend.
That might have been the Hava Amino.
Ooh, that was really sharp, but I don't know if you realize what you were saying.
No.
That's interesting. Could be Larabos is a shlil means dafka when it was aborted, and I'm thinking about a chick, an unhatched chick. Maybe that's what you were driving at. What's the isser of eating an egg that has a chick in it that's unhatched? So if it's doraisa, it's sheret ta'of. So a shlil that comes out of an animal is also usser to eat. Why? Because it's nevela, basically. I don't know, it's basically nevela. It's not eva menachai. It's not sheret ha-behema, but it's basically nevela. It's an animal that died without a proper shechita. I assume that a dover pashen, it's beferish. The only question is what isser it falls under. It might be under the gat. It probably is in the category of vasar basadet trefa lo sochelu basar shiatsim chutzlam chitzasav. So if that's the case, I wonder if that's what really Pshat and Shmuel's statement is, because the first three then would all be examples of
stuff that comes
isser chalal isser. No, things that are asurim, chaylev, nevela, and shlil.
Then you should have them under one kedi.
Right. Why would you put them on something
You could ask that question also on Chaylev and Mesa. The Gemara is going to deal with that. The Gemara is not going to interpret it that way.
No, but the Gemara said that Chaylev and Mesa is on one
Gidi. I'm asking to you 100%. The Gemara is going to say that Chaylev, Nevela and Mesa come from one Pasuk. Chaylev and Mesa come from one Pasuk. I agree with you. But somebody asked the question that the Gemara later is going to say in Kuf Tav Zayin that Rabbi Akiva doesn't need to darshan a gedi for shlil because it's obvious that it's basar. The question is, but Shmuel and Lamaskana, it stands for Shmuel, says that you do use one for shlil. So why did Shmuel even, it just occurred to me an alternate possibility that maybe shlil is the same thing as chaylev mesa. They're all examples. And a dafka means a shlil, not that was taken out after you shechted the animal, which is mutarid, but a shlil that was emitted or thrown out by the animal when it was alive, and the shlil really is asur to eat. It's very interesting. Okay. Anyway, that's the rabos. So these gedis, these three gedis, all include these things are bechlal gedi. That's why we have it three times, which of course is a little bit odd because you should require chad legufa. Right, one of them should be needed just to teach you a din. In other words, no matter what you would have said, you could have started dashing. You should only be dashing two things. Abigail?
Is the Gemara going to ask the same question on Rabbi Akiva?
He says three, gedi, gedi, gedi is three, teaches you three things.
No, I'll tell you what the difference is. Rabbi Akiva, what Rabbi Akiva does later, see, Rabbi Akiva fundamentally, Rabbi Akiva is talking about. So I would say the following. Rabbi Akiva would say that Gedi itself requires definition. It requires Hagdara. And I think that Rabbi Akiva would say that Gedi, immediately, the first thing it excludes is Behema Tmeah. Right? Gedi means a young Behema Tahora. That would be his first one. In other words, there is a Mashmos. Gedi clearly is a definition. It defines certain things. It's not really. What's that? That is Lagufa. That in effect is Lagufa. I think so. Now, that's what I could say for Rabbi Akiva. It's hard to say within Shmuel for some of these things that it's Lagufa. These are all like funny kinds of cases. This is more in the category of Riboy V'miyut, every single one. Look, ultimately, we're not going to get a full picture. We can say Pilpulim all day as to what system of drasha they're working with. But we will address some of the questions as the Rishonim raise them. We're not going to get sort of full understanding. Okay, so that's Gedi. Larabos, Larabos, Larabos. Now, Gedi. Okay, Gedi Lahotzias Atameya. Fine. Now, there are three more to go. So notice that we have a drasha to exclude both. Bisar Behemet Tameya and Chalein Behemet Tameya. Okay, fine. So
why do we need the two drushes?
We're not talking about whether you're allowed to eat it or not. We're talking about whether it's basar or b'chalav. You could say that the prohibition on the meat is only on the meat of a kosher animal. Milk doesn't matter. Any milk, you're not allowed to cook it in.
But once I know that the yisur basar b'chalav is only chal on basar tal, what would that be the halav?
It might be in any chalav. That, okay, why so you can't necessarily automatically assume that if it doesn't apply to Meah, maybe it doesn't apply, to Chalev Tameah also. Maybe it does apply to Chalev Tameah. The answer is, in a sense, Bachalev Imo, and the mother of a kosher animal must be kosher. If the mother of a kosher animal weren't kosher, it wouldn't be a kosher animal. Right? Yotze min atame, tame. What?
If you have a trefa gives birth, if the trefa gives birth to a.
That's an interesting. That's a very big discussion.
There's a
discussion about that, about vlad trefa. But certainly for defining min.
I thought a trefa
the din of yotze min atame applies to eggs. And a trefa chicken, yeah.
But I thought trefa chickens don't lay eggs. There's the sugi about double
trefa. I know. But if it started working on the egg before it became a trefa, then I think it can finish that egg. That's the way it works. Yes.
You can have also the other direction. You can have a kosher animal which gives birth to a non-kosher animal.
I don't want to go into... I know the Mishnah said Bechoros. I don't want to deal with that now. Anyway, bottom line is that you normally, if the mother is kosher, the vlad is kosher, and vice versa. Okay, so now, Shmuel... So b'chalevi mo, you have these three mi'utim, to exclude zachar, shchuta. What is shchuta? It means you take the milk out of the animal after you shecht it. It's a highly inefficient way of gathering milk, but if you're shechting the animal anyway, you may find some milk there.
That's from the kichal?
That's from the kichal, yes. Okay, so now the Gemara says...
From the stomach it would be called.
The Gemara, we only have three gedis, and there are six drushes, can't be. So Kasavar Shmuel, Chelev, Umesa. All right, so Rashi doesn't like this girsa, and Rashi amends the girsa, and Rashi amended a lot of girsas, and he amends his girsa by telling you, Hachi Garsinan. And very frequently our Gemara has Rashi's emendation. Not in this case, by the way.
Oh, really? We were trying to figure out what exactly... What did he do? He just erased the Kasavar Shmuel?
He said, erase Kasavar Shmuel Isser Chalisser. And starts out... And the Vav. Starts out, Isser Chalav Umesa Mechad Kranafke. Or Kasavar Shmuel Isser Chalav Umesa Mechad Kranafke. Why? Because they're both... So let's leave out the line for the moment. Shmuel, Chalav and Dam... Chalav and Mesa can be learned from one pasuk. Why? Because Gedi tells you what is the characteristic of Gedi. Gedi is mutar b'achila. Chalav and Mesa are asr b'achila. So anything that would be asr b'achila, even though it's basar, should be excluded on the basis of one Gedi. Okay, now we're down to five. Next.
Dam nami lav gedihu, v'shaya nami
b'shabam. All right, so dam we can eliminate because dam is not gedi. What does that mean? I mean, it's very nice. Okay, I don't like the things on the list, so I'll just start crossing some off. So the answer is no. Dam is not gedi because dam is never treated as basar. We mentioned yesterday dam is not bechal basar in the heter of nevela. And dam, when you want to know that the dam of a sheretz is aser, you need a special drasha to teach you that dam sheretz is aser because dam is not bechal the basar of the behema. Why? Because it's not solid like basar, doesn't taste like basar. It's what's that? It's something. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know if there's the conceptual view is the dam being the life force as opposed to being actually the animal itself. So therefore, dam is simply not b'chalav basar. You shouldn't need a pasuk to tell you that there's no basar b'chalav by it because it's not basar. So now we're down to four. And then finally saying that Shilya doesn't need a pasuk, it's Persha B'Yama. What do you need a pasuk to tell you that the placenta is not Bechala Basa Bechalav? It's garbage. So therefore, one pasuk to include Chelev and Mesa, one pasuk to include Shalil, and one pasuk to exclude Temeah. Strange. Ezra.
Whose definition of garbage is this? What if somebody doesn't like the intestines? Someone doesn't
can
like
I
the
teach
brain.
You Ezra?
Some people eat brain, some people don't eat
is
brain.
There a Sephardi dish that they use placenta for?
I really don't.
Okay.
If there is, I don't want to know about that.
I don't think so. I know. What's that?
There are people who eat placenta. I know somebody who eats placenta.
I'd imagine it's Sephardi or Ashkenazi.
Very strange.
That's correct. That's the correct answer. It doesn't really matter. I'd imagine, by the way, I wouldn't be surprised if there are people who believed it had fertility properties. I wouldn't be surprised if you find things like that. There are people who, bury placenta. Burying the placenta as a ceremony is chukos agayim and darkei amori. So it's usher to do, but you probably find some of these, I don't even know, probably reconstructionist feminist circles where they create these ceremonies about burying the placenta of the baby. So it's dark amori.
What do most people do with the placenta?
What?
In Berkeley, it's a common thing to do. My brother and sister-in-law used to live in Berkeley, and they said that was the common thing to do.
What do people normally do with it?
It probably goes along with the Wicca, okay? Ezra, I'm sorry.
What do people normally do with the placenta? Just
it's probably disposed of as bio waste. Yeah. Once upon a time, I don't know what they did with it. It probably was just cast aside, and probably some animals came and ate it or something like that. What's that?
So my point is just that the definition that it's garbage is very, subjective.
How many people would think that it's garbage?
but we have very proof. He knows somebody.
Fertilizer.
He knows somebody eats it.
So we say butla daito eitzel kaladam.
So what else does this apply to? I mean, does any piece of the animal that is not normally eaten is not meat?
Yes.
We saw it in Tosefta. Certainly not Basar Midaraisa. Those things are, the Shach claims those things are Asar Midarabanan. I'm not sure. In other words, it has to be something we would say is an edible as opposed to there's a cultural. But the fact is that there are a lot of people. There's an assumption that most of these things, again, our cultural perspective has changed because we in this country for the most part we don't eat a whole lot of organ meat. You know, there's liver, there's tongue, there's kishka, but a lot of stuff people just don't eat. It's disposed of or ground and fed to animals.
What about Blue Mountain oysters?
Okay, Vitalo?
Do non-Jews usually count for what people want, what's considered what, like, part that...
I think in this gather, yes. Yes. Yes, because you're dealing with a human definition of what's machal. The fact that we might not eat something, you know, because by that token, I've now discovered a heter for the hindquarters, right? Because Jews don't eat hindquarters because we throw it all away because we don't want to traber it, right? But that the fact that we don't eat it is because we have halachic considerations. You also have to realize you go back just go back to Eastern Europe, and they probably ate virtually every edible part of the animal. Because when you have very limited supply of calories, that's what you do. We are... What? Forget that. How about sweetbreads, okay?
Well, they have those fancy restaurants in Manhattan.
There are people who still eat them, I understand. Go to your average NASCAR fan and he'll throw up at the thought of at sweetbreads. You're not a NASCAR fan, yes. All right. Brains. Well, let's.
You don't need to say Yisrael Chalas in order to have this.
No, the reason why Rashi says that you don't want to be goyis Yisrael Chalas is because the Gemara on Kuf Tazayin says that according to Rabbi Akiva, since he holds Yisrael Chalas, he doesn't need a pasuk at all for it.
I understand. My question is, wouldn't it have been? I mean, couldn't Rashi have made the case also by saying you don't need the principle of Yisrael Chalas in order to be mitaneis Shmuel?
Correct. But what's driving Rashi? The point is, there are really three choices, three positions you can hold. You can hold Isser Chal Isser, and we just know that as a general principle from somewhere else, in which case you don't need a pasuk to teach you Mesa and Chela. Second possibility is you can, but Mesa and Chela, of course, are Basar B'Chala. And the second possibility is that there's a pasuk, Gedi, teaches you that Mesa and Basar B'Chala are, in fact, Aser b'basar b'chala, and this is the makar for Yisrochal Isser. And the third possibility is that ain't Yisrochal Isser, and therefore, in order to teach you that this is an exceptional case, you need a pasuk to tell you that Chelev and Mesa are b'chalal gedi.
I'm just saying
that namely, in the context of basar b'chala, Yisrochal Isser.
Whichever one of those you hold, it's still unnecessary to say Yisrochal. Meaning, Rashi's case could simply be coming from the fact that whichever one of those you hold, it's still unnecessary to mention it here because you just say whichever one of those Shmuel held that Chelev and Mesa are Aser, and it's logical to say that they're allowed to be the same.
No, the real question is, do they even need a drush at all? That's what's bothering Rashi. Now, there's later, the Gemara is going to say for Rabbi Akiva that if you darshan, that Rabbi Akiva, in order to get his three gedis back, right? He says, it's a chalissa, so I don't need a pasuk for Chelev Mesa. So that's what Rashi's saying. If the Gemara starts out by saying, Kasavar Shmuel is a chalissa, and remember, it's not simply a steer between two Gemaras, it's a Gemara that the Gemara ties together in Kuf Tesayin. The Gemara Kuf Tesayin makes reference to this part of the Sugya. So therefore, if you start out by saying, Kasavar Shmuel is a chalissa, so then you don't use a pasuk for Chelev Mesa. So why does the Gemara knock Shmuel, then the Gemara's knock Shmuel down to two, right? Not down to three. So for the moment, we'll erase it. We'll say that he holds that you don't say Yisr Chalal Isser, and Shoyas Pirsha B'Yalma, Dam is not Gedi, because it's not Basar B'Chalal, and Chelev and Mesa are learned from one Pasuk. So Chelev and Mesa are learned from one Gedi, Behemoth Tameh is excluded from another Gedi, and Shlil is included from the third Gedi, or out of that order. Yeah, did 1, 3, 2, sorry. Yes?
In the Rashi, Dibor Machil, Yisr Chalal Isser, does he, when he says veloitzrich kral lo lechele velo lemeta, does he not have the girsa that we have in our Gemara at that point?
Where are you in Rashi?
In Rashi, Yisrochal al Yisur, it's the second line of that Rashi.
Anishamati the Garas Lavachi Perish Yisrochal al Yisur Velo Itzrochal al Chevelo Mesa. That's Rashi under the influence of the Gemara later.
Right. Now, if you hold, if you, if you,
correct,
no crow.
but the problem is that you immediately ask the question. Mekasheli hadaminu lekama v'perkan Rabbi Akiva mishun the islay isachal aliser miatri lekula tlasagdi ledrasha v'aminam chel v'mesa lo tzrichi krav v'hachal shmuel nami the islay isachal aliser aminam chel v'mesa mechad kornafke v'lo miatri kulhu.
Okay.
Ela trei. So that's right. It's exactly
so
Rashi.
Previous Rashi is influenced by the
yeah. It's continuation. So that's where the Gemara leaves it right now. But now the Gemara has one question. Okay, what's the Gemara's question? V'hamar Shmuel. V'savar Shmuel Isser Chal Al Isser. Now, why does the Gemara think that Shmuel holds Isser Chal Al Isser? Based upon what the Gemara said until now. So if you say like the Girsa we have, it's because the Gemara says, Kasavar Shmuel Isser Chal Al Isser. Now the Gemara challenges it. But if, according to Rashi, Gemara never said those words. All it said was chad la mesav chaylev, chad la shlil, and chad la hotzi abeimatmeya. So why does the Gemara assume that Shmuel holds iser chal al iser?
Because it's
well, hold on. So the Gemara, but because the fact is that Shmuel does darshan a gedi la rabos chaylev and mesa, and the question would be then, would that not serve at least as a paradigm for iser chal al iser? Right? Why not let it serve as a paradigm for Sechal Isser? This would be the makar. Now, every time you have a din like that, there has to be a makar somewhere. So let this be the makar for Sechal Isser. Okay? So the Gemara's question is, if Shmuel says that we use a pasuk to teach you Chaylev and Mesa, then it must be that Shmuel should then from this walk away with Sechal Isser. And that can't be because we know another place where Shmuel says, Ein Isser Chal Isser, Chaim.
I mean, you still could have interpreted Shmuel's drashot here as still not being Ein Isser Chal Isser, in the sense that it could just be the issue of cooking. There's no Isser of cooking Chaylev, it's just an issue of eating it. Yet there would be an Isser of cooking Chaylev with milk. You would violate.
You could have. You're correct. That's a good point. And again, the Gemara chooses not to accept that approach. Right. The Gemara chooses not to accept that approach, but that by then may explain that may be why does the Gemara not accept that? Because the possibility exists in the continuation of the sugya that if something is not aser ba'achila mishum basar b'chalav, it's not aser mishum bishul. Just as the possibility might exist that if it's nesa mishum bishul, then it's going to be nesa mishum achila despite an iser chal
iser. So it drops the blood.
What's that?
So it drops the blood issue.
Well, that's a separate consideration. My point, what you're a very good ha'ar you're making, he's saying, why does the Gemara just say that Shmuel's din is just legabe? The Yisr Chal Isser is not an issue because it's gabe the Bishul. Bishul is vaday aser midarais levasha. So the answer is maybe the Gemara is not sure at this point because maybe if there's not going to be any Yisr Achila, there's not going to be any Yisr Bishul either. Okay, but we'll get to that later in the Gemara. Okay. So very quickly, now I'll take over for a moment, then we'll finish with this. So v'savar Shmuel Isser Chal Isser v'amar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Eliezer minayin l'kohen tamei she'achal truma tamei she'eno b'misa shenemar umei suvo ki yechal aluhu prat lezo shemchulal asvomedes. This is a din. There's an isser misa b'di shemayim for a kohen who eats truma when he is tamei. There is also an isser asay with no misa b'di shemayim for a kohen who eats truma tamei. Now the question is, what if a Tamei Kohen eats Truma Tameya? So Shmuel says that there's no Chiyuv Misa because this Truma is already Mechulelas. The clever person, of course, will ask the question, how do you ever get then the Chiyuv Misa of a Kohen, of a Tamei Kohen who's Tamei eating Truma, if after all, every time he's going to eat the Truma, when he picks it up, he's going to be metame. So the answer to that is either dealing with truma that's not mukshul lekabel tuma, so it never becomes tame, or if somebody takes it on a skewer and sticks it in his beis ablia. Okay, those are the two answers that are classically given.
Could he also use like stone sticks or something?
Also, this din note only applies when the truma was tame or Tmeya before the Kohen became Tameh. Then you can say that Ein Yisrachal Isser, and therefore since the Truma is already Tmeya, the fact that he becomes Tameh now doesn't create another Isser. But if the Kohen became Tameh first, it doesn't matter if the Truma is then Nitma, it won't make a difference. So you really don't even need that answer. One of the Mishonim goes through the Shach Levatarius. Anyway, so Shmuel says that you don't say Yisrachal Isser. So the Gemara gives three answers. Ibaya Seema Ba'alma. So you see, on the one hand, Shmuel says that the Isser Basa B'chalav applies to Chelev and Mesa. On the other hand, Shmuel says there's no Isser Chal Isser by Kohen Tamei and Truma Tmeya. So what do you do? So Ibaya Seema Ba'alma Isser Chal Isser. Really, you do say Isser Chal Isser. But for Shani Hosam, the Miet Rachmana, Umesuvo. No, but Truma is an exception. It's Exeris HaKasav, Umesuvo Ki Chaluhu. Only that one. Iba Yisema, but Alma Kasavar Shmuel Einis Ruchal Alisser. Vishani Hacha, the Rabbi Rachmana Gedi. Here is the exception of my Basa Bachal, because it's Xeris Akasa. The Basa Bachal even applies when there's this already. And finally, Iba Yisema, really maybe Shmuel holds what? That Einis Ruchal Alisser. Why? Because he learns from Basa Bachal. So why by Truma Tmeya does he say no Isruchal Alisser? Ha Didei? Ha the Rabbi. That the din of Truma is learned me Rabbi Eliezer, and as Rashi points out, whom Shmuel never met in his entire life, because that's the reason why they changed the Gerson, why they changed the Gemara from Rabbi Elazar to Rabbi Eliezer, because Rashi says that Shmuel can never possibly have seen Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer lived in Yavne. He was lived at the time of the Churban. That's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, and Shmuel lived 150 years later. The truth is, you could have said the same thing even if you had Rabbi Elazar. You also never saw Elazar ben Shemua, but for the fact that Rashi says it indicates he had the girsa of Rabbi Eliezer. That's why they changed it on the side. So the din that Ein Isser Chal Isser is that of Rabbi Eliezer, and the din of Shmuel is that Isser is Chal Isser, and presumably you learn it from Basar B'chala, that just as Chelav and Mesa, there's an Isser Basar B'chalavan on eating it, so too by everything else there will be an Isser as well. There will be Isser Chal Isser as well. Okay. Any questions at this point? Okay. So tomorrow Rabbigman will be giving shir. If you didn't get the Makaris for some reason, send me an email. I will send it back. I will send the Makaris back to you. Shir will be regular time. Please spend the time in the morning preparing for Rabbigman shir. It tends to be interactive and lively. Not as interactive and lively as the shir in the yeshiva and Eretz Yisrael tend to be. But nonetheless, so please be prepared. And then Wednesday we will resume where we left off in the Gemara.